I don't want people to feel like they can't go do these really cool experiences because they don't have XYZ. You know what I mean? Go have those fun times, those really awesome experiences that you'll remember on your deathbed.
Welcome to the Hunt Backcountry podcast, presented by Exo Mountain Gear. This podcast and the gear that we produce at Exo Mountain Gear share the same purpose: to make you a more capable, confident, and successful backcountry hunter. Straight to the point, no fluff, and no BS. This show is all about providing you with valuable information from experienced hunters. To learn more about the podcast or about our backcountry hunting packs, please visit exomountaingear.com. Well, thank you so much for joining us on this episode. Our guest is Abe Henderson, and he is a guide up in Alaska that has some awesome resources he's developing for you and me. Now, you might hear Alaska and think that's out of reach, can't do it, can't pull it off, don't have the budget to do a hunt like that. But these resources that Abe is developing are for you guys who think that you can't do Alaska. But guess what? You can, and that's what we talk about tonight. So Abe is developing a website and some guides that tell you how to hunt Alaska on your own. So the website is huntalaskadiy.com. His first guide is released is a guide all about how to do a Kodiak blacktail hunt, which is an awesome hunt that we're going to talk about on this show. You'll learn more about, and probably like me, after listening to this conversation, you're just going to want to go do it right away. So before we get into that show, I want to tell you guys a little bit about this podcast. Number one, it's for you guys. We can't do this without you. We love your feedback and we thank you for it. You can always email us directly to podcast@exomountaingear.com with any questions, comments, or feedback. And if you're enjoying the show, we would love to see a review in iTunes or wherever else you might be listening to this. I want to thank Ryan Pint for his recent review in iTunes. Ryan, we want to send you some Exo Mountain Gear swag, so shoot us your shipping address to podcast@exomountaingear.com. Also, another thing just for you guys, don't want to forget to mention this. Abe has offered you guys a discount on this Sitka Blacktail Guide. So if you go over to huntalaskadiy.com after listening to the show, or heck, just go do it now and check it out, use the coupon code HB20, and that'll get you $20 off of the guide. All right, I don't want to keep rambling. I want to get straight to Abe because this is an awesome show. One, I'm sure that is not only going to be helpful, but inspirational. Can't wait for you guys to take this one in. Thank you so much for tuning in and joining us. Abe, welcome to the Hunt Backcountry Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Mark.
Oh man, I'm so excited to get into this one. This is one of those where I'm just personally geeked out and can't wait to learn more from you. And it's exciting. So I'm stoked for what you're doing. Stoked to have you on. And I think we're gonna have to end up doing a couple of these with you here over the next year or so because you got a lot going on. Let's just start with some personal background and context, because I think what we're gonna talk about and what you're up to is very good, but knowing the man behind it, I think, gives it, some credibility and some context for why you're doing what you're up to. So let's just start with some background, hunting background, guiding, things like that.
All right. Well, I don't want to oversell it or anything.
Here's why I say that, Abe, because anybody can play the expert on the internet, and we at least need to know that you've kind of, you know, done your time in the field. So I'm not trying to pump you up, but at the same time, you're not like just some dude in a basement with a blog.
I am kind of a dude in a basement with a blog, and I happen to be sitting in Anchorage. I'm not trying to be the expert, though. I mean, I feel like I have some credibility to offer, but I think it's a mistake to think that you have to be like, you know, have a lot of initials after your name or have 25 years of experience just to be able to help people out. And I guess that's where the angle that I come from. So I just want to help people. And so, but you know, to get to the point that you're making is I am a guide in Alaska. I started working up here in 2009 as a packer first, you know, and got my guide license, and had a little stint in the middle where I made a run at corporate life when we added a couple kids and tried to be practical for a couple of years, and that didn't work out too good, you know. And I was always trying to get back up here. So, and I did this last summer. We packed up. I got wife and five awesome kids, and we packed up and moved up to Alaska permanently, which we've been talking about doing for over a decade. You know, and we finally made that move this summer. Big game guide, you know, done a little fishing guiding, but I don't advertise that. And then do some waterfowl guiding too, sea ducks, which has been a blast.
That's awesome. So where did you come from lower 48 wise before you came up here full time?
Yeah, I grew up in Oregon on the west side, kind of southern Oregon, Roseburg area. And I grew up hunting and fishing up in the Cascade Mountains in the Umpqua River Valley. And left home to go to college in Seattle. Met my wife there, my soon-to-be wife. She's from the Spokane area in Washington. And so, like so often happens with us young, hapless men who get married, like we end up close to the wife's family. You know what I mean? So we ended up living in Spokane for about 10 years. And finally, I was like, I got to get out of this town. It's way too big for me. And so we moved to the central Washington, like the Columbia Basin area, which I just picked a spot on the map and said, hey, this has better duck hunting than where we are now. And it's closer to the mountains. Let's go.
Perfect. So,
got a job there. You know, it was like no plan except like, where is the hunting better than here? Okay, let's go.
Man. So making the jump up to Alaska, five kids, that's huge, man. Good on you for getting out there and just making it happen.
Yeah, well, it wasn't a plan per se, or like much of a plan. You know, it was kind of like I actually got laid off from my corporate job, and it was definitely the best job I've ever had in terms of like career, you know. But I worked for a huge global company that in manufacturing, and they had like this, you know, 3 years of like really poor sales overseas in their biggest markets, and kind of held off on downsizes until finally they came through in like 50% cuts. And I felt so fortunate to be one of the cuts because I got to walk away. I didn't have to quit, which I had kind of like been starting to think about, you know, like I want to get back to Alaska. This is not what I want to do for the rest of my life. So I was thinking about how to put in my notice and like what that plan would be. And they just gave me like a severance package and waved, wish me well, wave goodbye. And I was like, man, this is perfect. Like late spring last year. And I had all summer to get the house ready to go and make the move. And it was great.
That's cool.
Nice.
So you said there's no plan, but what, going up to Alaska, were you thinking of going into guiding or just kind of doing what you had to do to make it happen? I mean, what was the loose plan, I guess, with getting up there?
Yeah, well, I knew I wanted to guide again. You know, it was like the saddest day of my adult life when my guide license expired when I took... We had twins. That was, see, that's what happened.
That changes things.
So I was guiding and leaving my family spring and fall, you know, still living in Washington and coming up spring and fall. And sometimes it'd be like 10 weeks out of the year I was gone, you know, with small children. And we had two kids when I started and then a third. And then... I don't know. It was there was this one day where I was like, are we sure we're done? Should we have one more? You know, so I kind of have to take the blame for that one. But we decided to try for one more. And at the time it was crazy because I knew we were going from like full size pickup truck to like minivan status, yeah. You know, or at least like full size SUV. It's like going to be a major change to have one more kid, you know, but. Yeah, it ended up being two kids. And at that point, I just knew like, okay, I can't. I got to take a season off. And that season became take a year off. And that year turned into like, I got to get a real job kind of thing. So, yeah, life gets kind of crazy, right?
Yeah,
but but it's also so good, too. I wouldn't trade it for anything. But no, when I got laid off, my wife, she was the one who was like, hey, we've been talking about going to Alaska for 10 years. Why don't we do that? You know, it was her idea. And I didn't have to bring it up. And at first it was funny. I was kind of resistant to it. I was like, we got such a good thing going here. A lot of life, a lot of friends, and you know, a lot of awesome stuff going on in Washington State and that region, you know. And then it took me about three, four hours to warm up to it. And then finally I was like, done. Like, yep, let's go north.
Nice. So
first thing I did was I texted my buddy Jeremy Rusink, who owns Rogue Expeditions, and said, hey, if I come up this fall, is there any chance you might have some guide work for me? You know, and he fired back a few minutes later, like a full season worth of dates, you know, and I was just like, oh my gosh, this is a no brainer, you know, like just got to get up there. So that's how that went down.
So heading into that, what species would that be guiding for with Rogue?
Yeah, I didn't even really know. I didn't ask.
I was like, doesn't matter. It's in the field.
Yeah. Doesn't matter if I've got pain work when I'm there. I think I asked him, what's your guide rate these days? Because I'd been kind of out of it for a few years. And he shot me back his pay and wage. And I was like, yep, that's good enough for me. I don't even care. Just tell me when to be where, And so I ended up doing moose hunt. Let's see. I missed sheep season just to get the house. We have a house. We bought a fixer upper a couple of years ago in Central Washington. So like in some ways, the timing was really bad. We hadn't fixed it up yet, So I spent all summer trying to get this thing ready to rent out because we wanted to keep it. We had a log house on 40 acres in Central Washington, a really cool place. So I got the thing fixed up and ready to go and got up here in time for moose season. So I did moose. What did I do? Peninsula brown bear hunt. I got a little sideways. And then back to Kodiak Island and I did Sitka blacktail on Kodiak. I did a fall brown bear hunt on Kodiak. And then we transitioned into a couple bison hunts too. There's free ranging bison on Kodiak, which are actually it's a really cool hunt. I don't know if we want to get into that or not, but we chase the big bulls. They go kind of solo and leave the herds and go up in the mountains. So that's a neat thing. Excuse me.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I was gonna say no idea that bison are on Kodiak.
So it's a privately owned herd, and that's kind of the clincher for a lot of guys. It's a guided hunt no matter how you do it because you got to pay the landowner basically.
Yeah.
Even if you don't go through Jeremy and Rogue Expeditions, you still, the landowner, the guy who owns the bike, or not, sorry, excuse me, he's not a landowner. It's a lease. It's a grazing lease. The herd owner, I guess you would say. He goes along with to make sure you're shooting bulls that he wants you to shoot because we're shooting older age class bulls and letting the 5, 6, 7 year olds come up in the herd as future breeders,
That's interesting.
So
how many are in that herd?
I don't know. That's a great question. There's several hundred.
Wow.
He said in the last couple of years, he's had a lot of problems, especially this last year with bears. And then he had some spring mortality. So did the deer too, actually, on the island, especially on the north end of the island, had a really bad winter kill this last year. So coming off of the 2016, 2017 winter.
Okay.
So his numbers are down a bit, but yeah, he's got some big bulls and they play like cat and mouse up in these little narrow high mountain valleys and we go fish them out. And the last one was so far up in there, we hired a helicopter to come and pull it out.
Wow. So with that being a privately managed or owned herd, does that still fall under all the Alaska game regulations? So what's tag acquisition like? Is it simple as going through that guide and paying that fee, or is it still going through like a process with the state?
Yeah, I know that's a great question. So it kind of falls between the cracks, right? Because Alaska has its own wild and state managed bison herds that you can put in for tags and the draw system to hunt. And of course, it's managed by Alaska Department of Fish and Game. This is because it's privately owned, even though it's on public land, it's totally private. So it'd be the same as like going to, South Dakota and to a bison rancher who's got a few thousand acres and saying, I want to go, just paying him a trophy fee or access fee or whatever to go shoot one of his bison.
I'm sure he has his own quota, so he's managing that. Yeah,
exactly. And like that, like I said, he wants to come along on the hunt and make sure, he's got these certain bulls, he's managing his herd. Nothing's ear tagged. Nothing's handled. I don't know if he's ever like shot him with a tranquilizer or done any antibiotics, anything. I mean, they're just out there roaming the hills and the beaches and stuff like that on Kodiak Island. It's a pretty neat thing, really.
That is cool. So this is, Kodiak's what we want to get into tonight. But just to give context before we start diving into Kodiak, which I'm chomping at the bit to do, tell us about the guide that you're releasing, not only for Kodiak, but the other guides you're developing and why you're choosing to develop these guides about hunting Alaska.
Yeah, sure. So I'll start with the guide that I released to begin with, which is, the Kodiak Sitka Blacktail Guide. And really, the idea for that started actually this past summer. And I've got some good friends back in Washington State, and we're hunting buddies and stuff like that and just talking to them. And they would always say, they'd always just make comments like so many people do, like, oh, I'd love to hunt Alaska. I'd love to do this hunt, moose hunt, caribou hunt, whatever, in Alaska. And my response, having been up here and, you know, been guiding and everything, was like, cool. Like, what's, you know, what's the plan? Like, when are you going? You know, what, you know, how, who are you taking with you kind of thing? Like, I'm trying to tease out some details or something. And with the, you know, with the intent of like offering suggestions or just hearing a good story or whatever. And so, like, it always, I don't know, so many times it's happened. It's like, oh, well, I don't, like, I'm not planning, you know, I just want to go someday. I don't know how to start planning. It's totally overwhelming. And that's kind of the response I get. So this kind of happened a few times. And it wasn't like, I don't know, over a few years or something like that, different buddies would have these conversations, you know. Finally, it was like, okay, I started asking people, you know, I'd meet somebody, we get to talk, and they find out I was a guy in Alaska. They'd say, I always wanted to, you know, hunt in Alaska. And I'd be like, cool, when are you? I would specifically ask, like, cool, when are you going? Like, what's the plan? You know, and it was like the same answer, like, oh, I don't know. You know, I was like, well, what's, like, what's holding you back from planning a hunt next year? You know, I don't even know where to start. Like that's what I would hear so often. I don't know where to start. And I thought, well, shoot, man, I am not an expert on hunting in Alaska, but I do know more than the next, than an average guy in the lower 48. That's for sure. Right. And I, it's part of my livelihood is coming up here. The thing about it is Alaska is this huge state. You know what I mean? It's like, we've all seen like the map overlays of Alaska on the lower 48. And it's like trying to be an expert in quote unquote, like hunting Alaska is like trying to be an expert in hunting half of the lower 48 for like five different species. You know what I mean? It's like, how do you do that?
It's like all over the West.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so for me, it was actually, it took a lot of like internal work for me, to be honest, to get to the point where I was like, okay, I'm not an expert in hunting Alaska. I just have done, I've had a lot of really cool experiences. I understand how hunt logistics works. I'm not an expert. Like, it's weird to put myself out there like that, but I did know, and I do know I can help people, you know? And so that's kind of like my comment earlier when we got started. It was like, I just want to be able to help. Like, I have good friends. Like, we have a blast. We're out elk hunting, mule deer hunting in the West, whatever. I want them to be able to come up here and experience Alaska, because it is awesome, man. And it's never disappointed me, you know, even after all a childhood of growing up and dreaming about hunting up here and whatever inflated expectations I might have had, I got up here and it was like totally exceeded that, right? I want people that I love and care about to experience that. And I want to be able to extend that to just anybody who's ever had that dream, you know? And so that's kind of where the idea came from. So I threw up basically an Instagram profile called Alaska DIY this summer, only for a few weeks, you know, just tossed it out there, put up a couple pictures, said, hey, this is kind of what I'm thinking about doing. I'm not really sure. Got a lot of good response kind of right away, like more than I expected. And we were getting ready to move up here, and I was getting ready to go into a full guide season that turned out to be like 5 months of guiding, you know, once I added on the sea duck hunting. And so got done with sea duck season like the end of January, and thought, man, I was still kind of like, I wonder if I should pick that back up again and try to do something with it. And, you know, kind of sat with that for a while and kind of decided, well, I'll get active back on the Instagram page again and just see if anybody, you know, if there's still any interest out there. Like, it had been dormant for almost 6 months, you know. And in 1 week, I just decided to go for it and started cranking on producing content. And it was like all this stuff that was in my head, because I have spent a lot of time on Kodiak Island, you know, all this stuff that was in my head, I just had to get it out on paper, which turned out to be like a much larger challenge than I thought it would be. You know, seems so easy in my mind, you know. And just threw it out there, you know, and it was like, it's not perfect. But I really put a lot of intention into helping the young guys, especially, you know, like 20s, 30s and early 40s, who are like, this is something I've always dreamed of doing. I don't know where to start. And who haven't done anything about it really up to this point. You know what I mean? Like, I wrote it with that person in mind. Like, all right, I'm going to take you through step by step. I'm not going to open the fire hose. I'm going to feed you information as you make decisions so you don't get totally overwhelmed. And I'm going to kind of help you, like kind of like the Cliff's Notes to planning a hunt or something like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes total sense. And I'll say, from jumping ahead, from seeing the guide myself, I mean, that's exactly what it is. It's so, like, it's linear, it's progressive, it's chunked like an easy, logical organization. It's not like this big, daunting book where you have to read through it. It's laid out super helpful.
Cool, man. Well, I appreciate that. That was the intention. So it's really good to hear that that's how it came off for you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. So just on that point, it's this online guide. It's kind of broken out in chapters. Anything else just to give the listeners kind of an idea of the format or what it really is if they get to looking into it themselves?
Do you want to jump into kind of like the basic framework or the table of contents, so to speak, how it's laid out? Or
is that'd be too cool overview. No, okay. That'd be great overview.
Yeah, okay, cool. So when I started about, I had to really stop and think, like, how am I going to present this information? And I actually have several rough drafts that I basically, like, wadded up and threw in the trash can, right? Because it's like, I got to make this work in a way that not only does it work for Kodiak, but, like, I can also take that and replicate it for other species and other hunts in other parts of the state, whatever. And so what I basically landed on, what made the most sense was, you know, like being in grade school and I don't know if it was writing class. I don't even remember what it was, but you learn the who, what, when, where, why, and how, you know, and that was essentially, you know, that's how to plan a hunt. I mean, if you can answer those questions and then you can also figure out, so I call that hunt characteristics. So if you like painted a painting or told a story of a hunt, that's kind of like the who, what, when, why, where, and how, right? Like that's how do you describe it? So if you add that to hunt logistics, which is how do you get there? You know, what gear do you need? What food do you need? How do you get home again? Where are you going to stay while you're there? And you put all those things together. So it's like, I think it's like 10 different categories. That's it. I mean, there's really nothing else other than like little odds and ends extras, little minuscule stuff. I mean, that's the, you know, the meat and potatoes of your hunt planning. And I think it's something that in one of the early chapters in there, I kind of compare it to a Midwest whitetail hunter. And like, if you can plan a hunt, you know, on Saturday morning, you know, opening morning of deer season on your family farm or your lease down the road or whatever it is, you know, sitting in a tree stand, it's like you can plan a hunt in Alaska. It's just more complex in Alaska and it's farther away, right? You got to do a little more research to figure out the details. Then I break it down and I go through that list of who, what, when, where, why, how, you know, how are you going to get there? You know, where are you going to stay? What are you going to eat? You know, and then how do you get home again? So that's basically, I mean, you can take that same principle or that same list of questions. If you can answer all those questions, you can plan a hunt in New Mexico for elk. You know, you can plan a muskox hunt in Greenland. You know, you can plan a tar hunt in New Zealand. You can plan a moose hunt in Alaska or a Sitka blacktail hunt on Kodiak Island. It's that simple.
Yeah. That's kind of cool even just to, like, just to see that framework play out. Again, kind of seeing the guide. Because you can take that and apply it to other species, other states. And even though the details are different, how you answer that question is different. As you said, the process of gathering that information is going to be pretty much the same no matter where you're going or what, you know, you're choosing to hunt. So yeah, it's neat to see for sure. I'm curious, why did you start with a guide for Sitka blacktail and Kodiak versus, you know, the other options that are up there with Alaska and get into moose or caribou or what have you? So what, like, why is it that you came out with this guide first?
No, that's a great question. I'm glad you asked that. So, and I addressed it in kind of in the introduction to the guide. So if I was going to do like a market analysis, if I was treating this like a real business, you know, I would not have started with Sitka blacktail, right? It is such an underrated species, and there's definitely interest out there in guys coming up and gals. I don't want to be sex specific here. Like, I know there's a lot of good female hunters out there that want to hunt Alaska too. But for folks who want to come up to Alaska, it's like Sitka blacktail is not on the top of the list for most people. Usually that's reserved for moose or caribou, or if they're going to, you know, pay for a guided hunt, they want to come up and hunt brown bear or doll sheep, you know. But I knew a couple of things. One, I was still struggling internally with, what am I going to do with this? Am I going to really be able to put this out here, out there like I want to? And I knew that I had a lot of experience with Sitka blacktail, had a lot of experience with Kodiak Island, and it would be a manageable thing to sit down and write and crank out and get a product out there that for whoever wanted it, you know, it would really be helpful. And, but more importantly than that, and it was like, this is like, it might be kind of a hard sell for some people, but I truly believe that like a Sitka blacktail hunt, it doesn't have to be Kodiak Island, but I love Kodiak Island, so that's my preference. A Sitka blacktail hunt in Alaska is the very best first-time Alaska self-guided DIY hunt. If you're going to come up here and you're going to do it on your own and you want to do moose, I'm going to give you a reality check. You do not know what you're asking for. In terms of
Steve is laughing from experience.
Yeah. I've heard it. It's been a long time, guys, but I heard you guys did a podcast on a self-guided moose hunt.
Yeah.
About the toil and the if only I knew. And yeah. Yeah. And a lot of that is good because it's like, man, what a memory. They're like, you guys are never going to forget that.
No, but never, never.
But what are you going to do for next time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, just, I mean, the only reason Sitka Blacktail are as underrated as they are or overlooked as they are is because they don't have big horns, you know, and that's it. But I like to think of them as like the northern cousin to the Coos Whitetail that's maybe like a decade behind in popularity or something like that. You know, like Coos Whitetail is like this growing following, this popularity of being like a winter hunt that you can do in Arizona or Mexico. And it's like a really high quality experience and all this stuff. Yeah, they're small deer, but, you know, for the guys who are really into it, they are really into it. And more folks are learning, you know, about those hunts and going down and doing them. And I think Sitka Blacktail is the same way. Look, if you plan a 7-day hunt with 7 days of hunting and you're going moose hunting and you shoot a moose, your 7 days of hunting is really 5 days of hunting. You know, I mean, unless you shoot it like right on the airstrip or very close, or you have, you know, a lot of big guys who are there who can carry, you know, pack all that meat out fast and they don't all expect to shoot their own moose. I mean, the logistics involved once that moose is on the ground of getting the meat out, the cost of flying meat and horns out, it's substantial. And I think a lot of people don't really understand exactly what that takes to pull off. And with a Sitka Blacktail, you can bone that thing out, put it in your pack, and walk anywhere you want to. I mean, you're going to have like a 90-100-pound pack. You can go as far as you want to pack in to shoot when you're going to pack it back to camp the same day or same night. And keep hunting the next day or chill out or do whatever you need to do, you know. And then once it's time to take that back home, it's like one fish box full of frozen meat, you know, with the cape rolled up in it and the horns in your pack or whatever, and you're checking all your bags on the airlines and going home. It's that. It's just so easy. You know what I mean? So it's just a perfect time. And the other thing is, like, for folks who have any experience hunting deer or especially like Western mule deer hunting, it, you know, it's like they have a lot of advantage in coming up and hunting Sitka Blacktail because they behave very similarly. The hunt is very similar. There's a lot of familiarity with deer hunting and what to do with the deer once it's on the ground. So that's why, you know, that's why I chose Sitka Blacktail. Just, I don't know. I love them too. I just think they're cool.
I'm excited to get into the details of the hunt, man. It's just, you're getting me all amped up.
I know. I was going to say, let's dive into, we're obviously can't nor will we cover everything in the guide, but I want to dive into some of the details to even just help these guys who are hearing this and help them see how it's done, how accessible it is, things like that. So like many people, yourself included with five kids, myself with young kids, Steve with young kids, I mean, you know, money's not growing on trees. Walk us through like a cost breakdown on making this happen on our own, and really the big pieces that are in place in terms of cost and then the overall cost picture for making this happen, like you said, for maybe a 7-day hunt.
Yeah, for sure. It might sound a little bit, I don't know, elementary or something like that, but in the guide, I break it down into like quote unquote big costs and quote unquote little costs. You know what I mean? And it's like, it sounds kind of funny, but really that's kind of how I think about, you know, hunt planning is like, you've got these lump sums that are large figures, and then you've got all the other little stuff that's going to add up at the end of the hunt, the end of your trip. You know what I mean? So in the guide, that's how I break it down. So, you know, for big costs, you've got your commercial airfare to get up to Kodiak Island. You've got your air charter and you've got some lodging involved in town. And there are options on the island to stay in some cabins on the refuge. But I think for most guys, if you're fit and you're comfortable with camping, I would definitely do a tent camp. And then actually the license and tags is one of the big costs, because in 2017, the state of Alaska doubled all their, license and tag fees for non-residents. So I don't know if you guys have talked about that in the past.
Yeah, not in detail. It's been mentioned and I know there's been outrage, but at the same time, I know that there's history to, let's put it this way, some justification for an increase. So if you want to dive into that, feel free to go ahead.
Well, I'll just hit it at a high level, cause I'm not an expert in like, you know, ADF&G policies or anything like that. But look, the last time Alaska increased the price of their tags was 2.5 decades ago. So
long time.
There's been a little bit of inflation and some other changes in that time.
Yeah. So like, I know everybody a lot of people have gotten excited about the tag increase, you know, but, you know, a Sitka Blacktail tag, what is it now? It's like $300. Right? It used to be $150. Like, what other out-of-state hunt can you get a tag, a deer tag for $150? Or or for $300. Like, I can't think of any off the top of my head. Like, can you guys in the Western U.S. can you get a deer tag for $300, a non-resident deer tag?
Well, I mean, shoot, do that. I'm in the Midwest, and if I want to go 20 miles away and cross the river into Illinois and hunt a buck, it's going to be like almost $600 for a whitetail in the Midwest. Yeah.
Oh wow.
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't know that. So yeah, so I, you know, even a moose tag, I can't remember what a moose tag's up to now. I think it's $800, and it's like that's the cost of an elk tag in Montana or something like that. You know, it's like. If we're going to make compare, I don't know. So anyway, I mean, I don't want to go into that too far, but I just like, it sucks because your tags aren't ridiculously cheap anymore. They're kind of on par with a lot of other hunts. So, but that is one of the big costs now.
Yeah. When you say commercial, obviously we're talking from lower 48 to Alaska. Where are we flying into in Alaska to get the best hop over to Kodiak?
You're going to go through Anchorage.
Okay. Yeah. I figured, but didn't want to assume and be wrong.
Yeah, and you know, okay, here's the deal with this guide. I can't break down every possible scenario or variable, you know, to plan your hunt. Like that would take, you know, an encyclopedia type volume just for like this one hunt. You know, there's just so many things you can do. So on this, I kind of give the cheap version, the middle version, and kind of like, money's not that big of an issue. Let's have fun or let's go all out. And one of the, you know, if you want to do this cheap, you're on a shoestring budget, you want to pull it off, you can probably do it for about $1,500. Like that's doable. You got to do several things, you know, very specifically in order to keep costs to a minimum. And you're not going to go out to the brewery and call that a part of your hunt cost, or you're not going to, you know, buy souvenirs in Anchorage or Kodiak, or, you know, you get what I'm saying. But like, if you want to do it bare bones, you can do it for about $1,500. Well, part of that is you might fly overnight through Anchorage, have really crappy layovers in order to land on Kodiak Island, right? Like, and you can totally do that. And actually, I've done that a lot. But if you are more into comfort and money's not quite the issue, like I would highly recommend come up a day early, spend a day in Anchorage, spend a night in Anchorage, you know, fly to Kodiak the next morning. Like, why not? Like, so there's, you know, there's kind of like you can do it however you want to do it. So for us guys with a bunch of kids, a bunch of mouths to feed who are young, it's like, yeah, you probably going to pull the layout, the, you know, the all night flight and get up a little red eyed and be flying out into the field, you know, hoping for a nap later that day. So, but it's very doable.
So guys can price, you know, airfare from where the heck they're at to Anchorage. And then obviously getting to Kodiak, that's where a charter would come into play. So what's kind of general guidelines on that? And maybe just some quick pointers on, you know, what charters are out there to get from Anchorage to Kodiak, maybe some of the things to look for. I mean, is it a deal where there's a bunch of options, or is it a deal where there's kind of a few to choose from? They're all decent, you know, pick whatever you want. Kind of walk us through that piece a little bit, because I know that that's one of the hangups, you know, from a lower 48 guy thinking of, you know, a charter and how I trust this guy and is it going to work and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and you just hit it, right? So like your air charter, that is the single largest cost of the entire hunt by far. Right. Especially if you can use airline miles in order to kind of mitigate the cost of your commercial flight up there, which I'm a big proponent of. And I give some details in the guide about that. Air charter. Yeah. So look, you fly in to Kodiak. It's not a huge airport. Right. There's several air charter services on the island. And in the guide, I recommend three that have been around for a long time. I've flown with two of the three of them. I've known a lot of guys who have flown with the third one with good recommendations, and they all have a long history of safety and then just get people on animals. It's just like they're professional, right? That's what they do. So I was very comfortable with recommending all three of those. Their pricing structures are different, and the aircraft that they fly are different. And so I really break it down kind of step by step exactly how to figure out your air charter costs and the information, like the things that you need to know before you pick up the phone or start typing an email to one of these air charter services. Because there's a huge difference in the price and just a lot of the details involved in getting a flight out of Kodiak into the field, into the, you know, somewhere else on the island. The nice thing is, when you know those details and you know what to ask for and you know how to kind of break it down and anticipate what they're going to ask you, you can give them that information. It can actually be a very quick conversation. You can easily have a flight booked after a short phone call if you're prepared. and have a good game plan, right? And it could cost you per person somewhere between $500 to $1,500 per person just to fly out into the field and back. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the $500 flight, you're missing out on something or it's not a good hunt, and you have to spend $1,500 in order to have a good hunt. That's not necessarily true. There are so many variables that come into play. So that's kind of like the number one thing when it comes to this whole hunt, though, is like, how do you get into the field? Who are you going to trust to take you there? And how does that all work? Like, how do you make a deposit? How do you, how do they factor the cost of the flight and where are you going to go, you know?
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that always gets me too with a hunt like this, and I'm just thinking through it in my own head, so used to this idea of me picking a spot and me scouting and me, coming up with, the place to go. But is this just a place where you can kind of rely on the charter to get you where you need to be, in terms of hunting and, like you said, being on game?
Like, to a degree, you can. So, you can definitely, I got to be careful. An air charter service or an air taxi cannot guide you. In other words, they can't point you towards game, nor can they tell you where to go, like where to hunt. So legally, no, they cannot tell you where to go. What I have found, though, is if you ask for suggestions and then make the final call, they are often, willing to provide you with some information. And you got to realize these pilots, that's how they make their livelihood, is flying hunters and anglers in and out of the field all year long, every year. And they get a very good understanding of where guys are being, or where hunters are being successful, where they aren't, where the winter kill is bad, where it's good, or when it's not. Just all of those questions, they get a really good sense for that. So if you want to crunch, the maps and the Google Earth and really get nitty gritty and pick a spot and go hunt it, that's awesome. Like, I love doing that and being surprised when I get there that it looks totally different than I thought it would, or something like that. You know what I mean? That ridge is way bigger than it looked on Google Earth, but at the same time, if you don't have a clue where to go, you can say to an air charter, and actually you don't even have to decide until you get ready to get on the plane and fly out where you're going to go. You can kind of say, like, this is my budget, and I give the details about how that plays into, how all that equates into where they're going to take you on the island, because it's all about flight time for them. They're in a business to make money. They've got overhead. They've got man hours, and they've got fuel. And so it's all about flight time. How much time are you in the air? So, and on the ground holding a pilot and a plane up, right? So if you say, hey, this is my budget, and this is exactly X, Y, and Z of how many people are coming and, what we're going to weigh and where we want to go, kind of thing in general, then you kind of don't have to necessarily choose the exact location you're going to set down right away. They can kind of say, well, here's some options, and you can do this in code, that's a possibility. So,
how big is Kodiak? I'm just trying to get an idea of, like, do you have hundreds of miles of country that you're hunting, or?
Yeah, it's not I don't know. It's relative. It's about 100 miles long by, I think it's like 60 miles wide, okay. Which doesn't sound huge, especially for mountain guys who get out there and hike a lot and cover a lot of country. It's like, I can easily do 10 miles in a day, So 100 miles long and 10-day hunt, you could go from one end to the other. It's like, well, there's a lot of wrinkles and folds in that country, The mountains aren't big, in terms of elevation, but they start at sea level, and there's a lot of parts that I like to think of, like, it reminds me of, Jurassic Park, like some kind of northern version of that island or something.
Nice.
So funny.
And the reality is like, flying over that island, we're talking about air charters, that is by far the highlight of my year. Every year is flying over that island. It's just, especially if the weather's good, it's such a fun flight. It's such a beautiful place.
Yeah. So these guys, as you mentioned, they're not guides, right? So they're not, they're not dropping you to a drop camp that they've, set up and whatever. How aware are they of other hunters in the field, maybe other clients that have been dropped by other charters? I mean, what's the likelihood of you, getting to a spot, them dropping you to a spot, and then kind of running into a situation where you're on top of or in, relatively close proximity of other hunters? Is that a concern?
I guess I have two answers to that question. One is, most of the pilots that I've talked to, and I can't speak for everyone, they're very good about that. Like, they understand they're in this business. Like, if you, they drop somebody on top of somebody else, they're going to get a bad, you know, and they didn't care, you know, and just said, no, this is where you're getting out. Like, they're going to get a bad review. You know, a lot of the business there on Kodiak is word of mouth and return customers. That's how they get their business. And, you know, a lot of them fly out the guide, the local guides and stuff like that. So it's very much like, think, I don't know, a small town, like everybody knows everybody kind of thing. That's kind of how this, you know, how it works there. And so if they start building a bad reputation for dropping hunters on top of other hunters, they're not going to be in business long, or they're not, you know, people will find out about that, right? It's not going to go well for them. So, and most of them are just good people is what I've found, you know. So no, I don't think that's a major issue. And that's definitely something you can have a conversation with your pilot about. Some of them within a certain, you know, I don't know, you know, within like certain time frame, you can kind of look at a couple spots in the air and decide how, you know, where you're going to sit down. Or if you have one spot in mind and there's a camp there, most of the pilots will say like, okay, well, here's another spot we can check out. And if there's somebody there, like, it's a good spot. Like, they're going to work with you on that, right? They want you to be successful. They want you to be happy with the service they provide.
Okay.
The second answer to that question is, I've guided on Kodiak before around a lot of other hunters. On the south end, I've guided bear hunts with resident hunters who have also drawn tags for that area. And I've also guided deer hunts with resident hunters in the area. And I've kind of found that, it, you know, if you have a good game plan and you have a good system for hunting and you stick to it, it kind of doesn't matter that much. Like, sure, like, if you're hunting really close to camp and you're limited to that, then maybe, you know, there's going to be some problems. But I just really haven't found that to be an issue in the past. Okay. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Is there generally just a lot of deer, a lot of opportunity?
Yeah, so that really depends on winter kill.
Okay.
And the kind of boom bust cycle of Sitka deer on Kodiak. And it's worse in some places than others, you know? And pilots actually have a really, I mean, they're just going to a good source of information once you get serious about planning your hunt, because they know where the winter kill was bad, because they fly over and they see dead deer and they get reports from hunters, people in the field who are not seeing any deer. And, you know, they just got a good finger on that pulse. But in years where the population's built up, it can be a little bit crazy. I wasn't there last year, fall of 2016, but it had been, I think, three or four really mild winters in a row. And everybody that I talked to on the island who hunted said it was just kind of silly. A lot of kids and, you know, kids are awesome. They can get out there and do stuff. They're not going to hike as far, you know, as a lot of us. And they were getting out there and they were shooting 3-4-year-old mature deer, you know, near roads and stuff. Like, there was just a lot of deer in a lot of good age class out there running around. This past year, after a hard winter, we had to work really hard, you know, on some of the hunts that I guided. We had to work pretty hard to find deer in the 3-4-year-old age class. So it definitely depends on where on the island you are and what the winter kill is like. But that can easily be solved by just doing a little bit of research in the late spring, kind of midsummer before a hunt, and figuring out, was there a winter kill? If there was, what areas of the island were least affected? And kind of being, you know, you can still change plans, especially if you have an air charter, you know, if you've got your slot booked on the calendar, you can definitely be pretty flexible, you know, when you've learned that kind of stuff.
Okay, perfect. You mentioned calendar. That's one thing I wanted to talk about, was kind of timing. Before we get to time of the year, though, we've mentioned 7 days. Is that kind of your general guideline of, let's have 7 days on Kodiak to hunt, you know, given that, you know, it's Alaska, a couple might be, you know, socked in with weather. Would you recommend, you know, don't go below 5 days, or any sort of guidelines on that?
You know, I don't know. It varies so much. I think that if you can be realistic about who you are as a hunter and what your expectations are for the trip, then you can answer that question for yourself. So 7 days is a great hunt. That's a pretty long hunt for a Sitka blacktail hunt. I've never hunted a solid 7 days for one hunt, like guided or otherwise. Most of the guided hunts we do are 5 days. And that usually provides more than enough opportunity. And three, you know, we've had some real weather problems, especially this last year, later in the season. And we had a hunt that was like, we lost 2 days to weather, just couldn't fly out of the town at all. And we had a 3 day hunt and we had like opportunity every day on quality deer, all three of those days. So if you're planning a hunt, if you have a super tight window and you only have 3 days of actual hunting to get up here, you could have two weather days and it's like, you got 1 day to get it done and the stress and, you know, like I wouldn't recommend that. But if you're planning, if you can only get away for like 5 days of actual hunting time once you're in the field, then I think that that's pretty reasonable, especially if you're a go-getter and you know how to cover country and you know how to hunt, you know, hunt deer in open country. And, you know, that's definitely doable. 7 days would make a great trip, a 10-day trip, you know, take a week and a half off or whatever it is and take your time, add on some fishing on the end or something like that and just really enjoy Alaska, being in Alaska, not feel rushed or anything like that. You know, that could make a really great experience.
Okay, cool. That's helpful. So if I'm correct, the season for the deer is pretty much, you know, roughly August, almost through the end of the calendar year. Is that correct?
Yeah, I can't remember what the end date is. It might be like the 31st or something like that. And you got to realize that Kodiak is divided up a little bit into some different zones for deer. And so I'm talking about basically the southern 2/3 to 3/4 of the island. The north end of the island, there is some deer hunting there. It's much more limited. The season ends much sooner and it's for non-residents. But the south end, I think if you're going to come all the way up to Kodiak Island, I mean, getting the beaver on floats and go experience Kodiak, you know, like that's why you're there, you know? And so that's what I wrote the gear, you know, kind of really directed towards is like, get out there and like experience a real fly out Alaska adventure. And so once you get down to the south, you know, the southern 2/3 of the island or whatever it is, you've got, I think, a 3 deer limit. And I'm going off of memory here, but it's been that 3 deer for a long time, I'm pretty sure. 3 deer limit. And yeah, it's like August 1st opener, and I think it might be December 31st closure. Don't quote me on that. But the horns start falling off bucks sometime around the first week of December or can fall off. I know guys who have shot deer, and when they flopped over, a horn popped off, or they grab deer by its horn to roll it over or something like that, and the horn pops off in their hand. So we typically don't hunt them after like Thanksgiving or maybe the last week of November at the latest.
Could you kind of walk us through maybe the differences on hunting them, you know, August, September, October, November? Like what consequence does that have on the type of hunt, the behavior of the animal, things like that? Because it could help some guys maybe pick when they want to go based on, you know, the type of hunt really that it'll be in terms of behavior dynamics and things like that.
Yeah, a lot of it depends on where you're at on the island. But basically, it's really similar to mule deer. So if you're familiar with mule deer in August, you know, they'll be in their reds and in velvet and usually up high in the alpine, at least if that's where you like hunting them. Like I do, go, especially scouting is super fun, right? Because they're so visible at first, like just glowing orange on the hillside. And that's very similar. The Sitka bucktails are very similar to that. And then in September, you know, somewhere between late August and early September, they'll start, you know, losing their summer coat and shedding the velvet. And they'll kind of drop down a little bit. You know, I'm not trying to come across like a biologist or anything. Like they're, you know, you could hear what I say and go and be like, well, that's not exactly what I saw, you know. But roughly that timeline, they're going to be in the alpine out in the open, like super visible a little bit less. But man, you know, even in early October, like we were seeing them first thing, you know, in the morning, they'd be up in some alpine bowls and stuff like that. They just weren't like living there quite as much as they were earlier in the season. So they kind of transition down like mule deer, you know, how they'll timber up and kind of hit that secondary zone when they lose their summer coat. But so the Sitka blacktail are kind of similar. And then October, kind of a similar story. You know, the green is all changing to brown. And leaves will start falling off the alders and willow and stuff like that. And then you get into November and then they, you know, towards the end of October, you talk to different people, you know, and you'll kind of hear different things in terms of rut timing. And I think it can vary where on the island you're at, you know, or what kind of conditions you experience or just how much you're out there looking and what you're seeing. But I've seen some rut conditions like this last year. We had a cold snap at the very end of October and we started to see the bucks cruising a little bit and lip curling, definitely acting a little bit ruddy, you know, just getting started. You know, but the peak rut, I wouldn't say, was till like mid-November, even closer to Thanksgiving. So somewhere in that window. But they rut for a long time, and they rut really hard. Like, that's one of the reasons the winter kill is so hard on those deer, is because those bucks, I think, they just rut hard and they go into the winter in low condition. And if they don't have a spring green up to recover, man, they're kind of like at the end.
Mm-hmm. How is weather changing in that time frame? Because that's another factor that, you know, guys might decide to choose, you know, the time of the year and the season based on what weather's going to do. As you get into November, does it get really nasty?
Yeah, you could say that. We had, I don't know, four groups of hunters this last year in November and early December that had some major delays due to weather. We had some pretty nasty storms blow through, and I mean, that's Alaska. So, you know, one of the things, if you're planning a hunt to come up here, it's like, you just gotta, you know, make your plans to the best of your ability and, like, you know, get them locked down and get a good itinerary or agenda or whatever you want to call it. And, you know, have that plan in place, but just know, be ready to, you know, be flexible no matter what. You might incur more, you know, lodging expense in town because you can't get out one day and you got to get a hotel that night. Like, there's no sense in being upset about that, you know, or even worrying about it. It's like, you just got to roll with it. So, yeah, early in the season, you're going to have better weather. And later in the season, you know, you get some storms blowing through, it can be a lot worse. But you can always expect either rain or sun or wind or cold or warmth. I mean, I just throw all my clothes in my pack and start hunting, like start hiking. It's like, I don't worry about that too
much.
Get what
you get.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But no, if you're planning if you want to hit peak rut in Thanksgiving, you want to fly like to the south end of the island, just know there's like a 50-50 chance you're going to have some pretty serious weather delays, or at least that's possible. Whereas you might not have that earlier in the season.
Right. Mm. Makes sense. So I know that this is open in terms of weapon. You could go bow or rifle. And any pros and cons there in terms of how that plays out on the hunt? Any recommendations that you have? Or is it more of a, you know, if you're a bow guy, stick with the bow. And if you want to hunt with a rifle, just do your thing.
Yeah, I kind of got into this in the guide maybe a little bit more than was necessary. And that's because as a hunting guide in Alaska, I see this play out, you know, and it's kind of one of those things where I'm like, I think people sometimes make it harder on themselves than it has to be. If you're a bow hunter, look, first of all, it's not that big of a deal. The whole point is to get up to Alaska and have a really cool experience, right? But if you're a bow hunter and you love bow hunting and you want to bring your bow to Alaska, cool, bring your bow to Alaska. Like, I wouldn't worry too much about second guessing whether it's going to cost you opportunity or whether you're going to actually be unsuccessful or successful or whatever. There's a lot of opportunity for Sitka Blacktail, especially if you don't need like a Boone and Crockett or a Pope Neon buck. But that said, you still could very easily come up and hunt hard and shoot a Pope and Young buck with your bow, you know, in 5 days of hunting. I mean, that's very, very possible. So yeah, muzzleloader, rifle. I guess my point of view is just bring what you want to hunt with. And if you're torn about it, bring a rifle. Because if you're that torn up about, you know, like trying to decide, or like, you get the guys who bring a bow and then pack a rifle, you know, because they want to shoot one with a bow, but they don't want to go home empty handed. And so the rifle's there, you know, in case they can't get close enough or whatever. And I get that, but most of those people, and I'm speaking from very real experience here, most people end up shooting that animal with a rifle. Like, they just packed a bow around and went through a lot of like kind of like mental anguish and anxiety over this issue. A lot of second guessing and stuff just to shoot something with a dang gun, and still had a great hunt. And they're thrilled. They're like super happy because like the experience of hunting in Alaska is much larger than whether you're shooting something with a bow or a rifle. So I don't know. I don't want to make it a bigger deal than it is, but I just think it's not that big of a deal. And look, I told this story in another podcast just a couple weeks ago, the Hardworking Hunter podcast with Zach. But I had a guy on the south end was like a recurve hunter, and he was like in his 70s, you know, and he was on. We had a fantastic hunt in Peak Rut, but he was on Pope and Young Bucks every single day, and just had a hard time getting the shot off, was what it came down to. But, you know, Enrique, if you're talking like 25 yards or less, I think was what he was, you know, was his comfort range or his comfort, you know, where he was, felt comfortable shooting a deer. And we had opportunities every day at multiple bucks within those ranges, including, you know, several Pope and Young class bucks. So just bring what you want to bring and have fun.
Yeah, that's cool. I appreciate that perspective. Let's wrap up with this. I can't believe it's been almost an hour already, but I want to touch on this because it's going to be a sticking point, I'm sure, at least in some guys' minds, maybe when it doesn't have to be. But let's talk gear just a little bit. So your average guy, let's say, who listens to this show and is maybe equipped to go do a mule deer hunt or an elk hunt or, you know, a little bit of backpacking, they kind of have that gear dialed. Is that sufficient for coming up and doing this hunt? Are there things that they need to, you know, add to that lineup or maybe improve in that lineup? Or is a lot of the gear that we're already using down here in the lower 48 for, you know, your average fall hunt going to be suitable up there?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. One of the reasons that this Kodiak hunt specifically is so good is because that guy who's doing a lot of hunting in the Western U.S. especially, who's totally decked out on camping gear, backpacking gear, you know, most of that gear, if not all of it, will work just fine for him up here. He's not going to have to necessarily invest in new gear if he's comfortable with it. In the lower 48, especially in the mountain regions, you know, where you get storms and you get high wind and you get some rain and stuff. So what I would say is, here's what you got to have. You need to have a tent that won't blow over, right? So if that means bringing in, you know, I don't know what, whatever you have, if you've got a $100 or $200 REI tent, you know, that can work fine. Just make sure you got, you know, all your guy lines staked out and you choose your camp location wisely, right? Totally can work. Good three season tent. So make sure you have a good quality shelter though. And then don't come up without serious rain gear, right? So I'm kind of, I don't know. I love gear. I'm kind of a gear nerd a little bit, you know, but like we all are. And I really like high end and kind of like cutting edge, ultra lightweight kind of stuff. I nerd out on that kind of stuff a lot. But when it comes to giving advice for gear to get people up to Alaska and actually have a good time, I'm like the opposite of that, right? Like, don't nerd out on all that cool stuff. Don't get caught up on Kuyu or Sitka or First Light. That's all good quality gear there, but like, don't worry about it, right? If you want to come up to Alaska and have a great hunt and you don't have what you think is really high quality rain gear, it's super simple. Make sure you got good waterproof boots, some Gore-Tex boots, right? Hiking boots. You know, add a top and bottom layer of like Helly Hansen Impertech, which is $80 or less for the top and the bottom. And that's basically it. Some good waterproof gloves, you know, and go hunting. It's like, you will be dry, you know. And if you can be dry, you've got the layers to put on underneath to stay warm. If you can get into a tent at night and get out of that rain, get your rain gear off, right? You're going to be fine. So when it comes to like the clothing aspect and everything like that, if you got a backpack, a Sitka Blacktail is not a huge load. You're not packing out a 150-pound moose hind quarter, right? So a backpack that works for you for hunting elk, if you're packing out elk quarters, you know, back home, it's going to work fine for packing out a deer up here. So like, don't overthink the gear. Just make sure you got quality rain gear. And if you've got like the name brand hardcore backpacking stuff and you spent $300-$500 on a jacket, awesome. It's going to work great. Like, you will have, you know, no problems. But for the guys who might not have that, I just don't want them to get discouraged. So, and I don't know. Do you want me to tell about my kids? Like, how yeah. how I hook them up?
Yeah, man.
Yeah. So I have five kids and my two oldest boys, they get out and we do a lot of hunting together and they've both done some backpacking wilderness trips and stuff like that. And we have a lot of fun and they grow like crazy. Right. So I just take them to the thrift shop every summer and I don't care about what color it is. I don't care about, all I care about is that it's synthetic. It's stretchy, you know, except for like insulate, like puffy layers, like down coat or something like that. But if it's any kind of base or midweight layering, it's got to be synthetic, stretchy. And it's just basically got to fit them. Like, they're not going to out, you know, they're not going to outgrow it tomorrow, or they can actually walk in it because it's not too big. That's it. Like, we bounce around in some goofy clothes out there, but you know what? Like, it keeps, as long as they've got something to keep the water off of them on the outside, like what I call shell gear, you know, like your rain gear, gaiters, a good pair of gaiters go a long way with that combo. And what's underneath doesn't matter, and it can cost nothing. You know, it can cost $30 at the thrift store. So, yeah, I just don't think, you know, I don't know. You could pay $20-$30 for a pair of, you know, name brand wool socks that are going to last you for 10 years. But if you want to go hunting this season and you're on a budget, like I bought a pack of Costco wool blend socks for, I don't know what they were, like $6 for like four pair or something crazy like that. And I've totally done tons of hiking in them this winter. And it's like, they're fine. I don't care. Like they work, you know, like yeah. let's not get too caught up on some of this stuff. And my thing is like, I don't want people to feel like they can't go do these really cool experiences because they don't have X, Y, Z. You know what I mean? Like, go make the memories. Like, that's what I care about. And that's what I try to do for my kids and in my own life. Go have those fun times, those really awesome experiences that you'll remember on your deathbed. You know, you're not going to remember if you had that really cool jacket back in 1985 that now, you know, looking back, it's like really dorky look. Like, who cares? Like, you know what I mean? It's like, just go have fun, man.
I love your perspective. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's so good. Just one last question. I just personally curious about, and then were you piping in there, Steve? You want to throw one in?
Yeah.
Go for it.
Yeah, just bears.
Okay. Yeah, good topic.
Yeah, what bears? Yeah.
Yeah, there's bears on Kodiak.
Yeah.
They're there. it's a tough one, okay? I've had very close calls with bears in my work as a guide and had to deal with some issues. And like 99.9% of the time, I can't find a dang bear if I wanted to, you know what I mean? Or like I can't, you know, but I don't want to say don't worry about bears because somebody's going to come and be like, well, he said don't worry about bears. And then we had this terrible experience, you know, right. Like it's, you got to be cautious. Like that's it. Like be alert. Don't be worried. Don't be fearful, but have a plan, right? So if you're going to come up, I would not recommend coming up and walking around Kodiak Island without any weapon at all. That would, you know, be some kind of a deterrent to a bear if you're deer hunting and you're, you know, at some point you might have a deer down and it'll be gutting and whatever, right? So if you've got a bow, think about bringing a sidearm or a friend with a rifle, and that's perfectly fine as long as you guys have a good plan, right? Because the reality is, as we all know and have heard stories, even recently with Steve Rennell and that crew on a Fognak, I mean, people do get charged by bears, and bears are a very real threat on Kodiak Island, just like other places. However, the chances of that happening, I feel, are pretty low in the time that I've spent there. Have a plan, be alert, right? It's like if you've got a dog in the neighborhood that's an aggressive dog and you know it can jump over its fence and you're out walking in and this is your like home neighborhood, like you're just going to know that that's something you need to keep an eye out for, especially if you're out with your kids, walking to the park, whatever it is. That's a known danger or threat that you are going to be very alert in about and have a plan. Like, okay, if that dog jumps over that fence and comes after us, you know, it's like, this is exactly what I'm going to do. And I just feel like it's the same way with bears. I think about bears more when I'm in brushy situations. Visibility is greatly reduced, or I'm carrying meat or like, you know, actively butchering an animal with my head down or something like that. And so then I'm kind of conscious of what I'm doing and making sure I'm looking up and keeping my eyes open, stuff like that. The rest of the time, as long as I can see fair, you know, few, I don't know, 50, 30, 50, 100 yards away, good visibility. I'm not covered in blood. Just, you know, it's just, I'm keeping my eyes open anyway because I'm hunting. So I just feel like, you know, if a bear shows up, there's going to be time to do something about it before it's like right in your lap. Right. So be careful. Be smart, but don't be fearful. Don't have a lot of anxiety, but have a plan, right?
Yeah.
Perfect. Great.
So last one, just wanted to touch real quick on optics. Binos sufficient? Do guys need to be thinking about a spotter maybe in certain areas of the island, or is that overkill? You know, what's your recommendation on optics in general?
Yeah, spotters definitely not overkill. In fact, I pack mine everywhere. Okay. Sitka blacktail are small.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not lightweight deer, but they're just like compact, and Kodiak is big country, you know, tall grass, a lot of brush. You'd be surprised like how many times you look at a hillside and then realize that a few minutes later, there's actually a deer standing on it. You know what I mean? Even if you're a very competent glasser. So I would say optics, bring the best optics you have. Don't feel like you have to go out and buy Swarovskis where you're not going to get, you know, your money's worth out of the trip. Like that's crazy. Just, you know, if you're, if you're a spot and stock hunter in the West and you've been getting it done with, you know, on mule deer or elk or coos whitetail or whatever it is, like, then those optics are going to be fine for Alaska as long as they're waterproof, fogproof, right? But if you have a spotting scope or have a buddy with a spotting scope, definitely don't leave that behind.
Perfect. Man, this has been so good. Let's make sure we have all the resources out there for guys to go learn more, check out the guide, get in contact with you, follow your stuff, and I have more guides coming. So give us that whole spiel on where guys can get plugged into what you're doing, what you have now, and then what's to come.
Yeah, cool. Okay. So the Kodiak Sitka Blacktail Guide is available right now, and it's on the website. It is Hunt Alaska DIY, www.huntalaskadiy.com. So you can go there. You can see the Kodiak Sitka Blacktail Guide, and right now, if you sign up, there's a little form deal. It says, or a little button says, like, get a sneak peek. And you can throw in your email address and look at, like, the first, I think on the website it says, look at the first three chapters of the guide. And I think what the link you get gives you, like, the first five chapters. So my theory, or I don't know, my philosophy of, like, helping people out is to help, not, you know, like, probably one thing that I try to over deliver a little bit. Cause you know, it's like, we're all out here trying to just, you know, live this life, have some good times, you know, have rich experiences, hopefully share them with friends and family. And I just feel like there's no need to be really stingy about things when, I don't know. I don't feel like threatened by competition or anything like that. I just want to help people get out there and have a good time. So it is available for sale, right? It's like, I'm not giving it away. I have a lot of time invested in it and a lot of time to learn a lot of skills and information that I put out there. So it is for sale. But I feel like there's also a lot of information available for free if you just look around on that website. So huntalaskadiy.com, subscribe to the email deal. And what I'm doing currently, I don't have a blog set up because the way I'm doing it currently is I'm providing a lot of cool information totally for free through the email subscription thing. So I'm not doing a lot of salesy stuff and I'm not pinging you like every week or anything like that. I can't do that. I'm guiding, you know, 6-7 months out of the year. So it'll be a ghost town there for several months in the spring and fall. You won't hear from me, but I am putting out some cool stuff and some, I feel like, really helpful information if you do subscribe to that email list. So that's available. On Facebook, it's Alaska DIY. There's a group set up. Honestly, this is a terrible confession. I don't know how to use Facebook. I'm terrible at it. Right? It exists. If somebody wants to get on there and start making comments, that'd be really cool because then you'd force me to figure out how to work the thing so I don't leave you hanging. And then Instagram is @Alaska_DIY. And I do kind of weekly posts on there. Again, I'm not like a social media genius, but I use Instagram more than anything. So if you want to follow me on Instagram, cool. That's awesome. I do post up some teasers on there, ask some questions, just try to get a little dialogue going. Go to the website. The guide is available regular price. It's like $100, right? And in my way of thinking is like, if you're going to plan a $1,500 to $2,500 trip, and that's kind of like a base price, right, to come to Alaska, do a Sitka Blacktail hunt, $100 that could potentially save you several hundred dollars in making mistakes or, you know, like, you know, just no, giving you like cost saving tips and like exactly what you need to do to make this happen. And also, like, the whole thing is like, you can plan your hunt. If you sat down and planned your hunt as you read through the guide, and this is what I encourage people to do. If you plan your hunt as you read through the guide, you're going to get your hunt plan in less than 2 hours, I would say for sure. Maybe like an hour and a half to 2 hours, you know. You're going to get that rough plan done. And of course, it'll take some follow-up after that. But then you'll have all the information as to why you're making the decisions. And I just really tried to provide value so that like people aren't second-guessing. They're not, you know, there's not a lot of back and forth or wish-washing or analysis paralysis or anything like that. So I feel like there's a lot of value there for that $100. And then for this podcast, like I went ahead and just threw a discount on there for listeners of Humpback Country. So I did a 20% off discount. So if you're listening to this and you want to get on there and check it out, you can enter HB20 at checkout. There's a little coupon button. Click on that, enter HB20. I think it's all caps, HB20 at checkout. And that gives you, so you'll get it for like $80.
Perfect.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, I'll say I haven't like gone cover to cover A to Z, but I've been through quite a bit of it myself. And as I mentioned before, it's laid out awesome. What you said just a little while ago about actually being able to have a hunt plan in a couple hours, I think is true. I really appreciate it even within there how you do these like little pullouts in a section where you basically summarize, okay, do this now. Like, here's what we're talking about. Now go do this. And I think even if you just follow those do this now steps, you're going to walk away with like, okay, this is actually doable. Here's a plan. Here's when I can make it happen. And I personally think that's worth $80 for sure.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, you know, that was my intention is like, if you're going to give me some money to like throw some information out there, it better be really valuable. You know what I mean? It's like, it better really help you. So that was my intention. But yeah, I hope it helps folks. And I'm totally open. Here's the thing. Like, I'm not an expert at this stuff, right? I'm trying to share with folks who have similar passion that I do hunting in Alaska, right? If you look at the guide and you have some suggestions, you know, or if you're like, yeah, you didn't really answer this question, I would love to hear about that. And because I mean, it's not like chiseled in stone. It's like I'm continuing to improve it as time goes by. And I have a few more ideas for things to add to it as well. So it's not like a totally finished product yet either. I have some cool things in mind that I want to add to it that would really even increase its value, even, you know. I feel like substantially more than it is right now. So, but yes, the do this now sections, if you actually do them as you go, you will soon be calling or email people. You'll be talking to your spouse and your boss. You'll be making real decisions kind of like as you read through this thing. I like to think of it as kind of like choose your own adventure. You know, it's like, I'm going to start with this storyline. And then by the time you've gotten to the end, you've kind of taken these different paths and you have your own story, you know, which hopefully turns into like, you know, horns on the wall and pictures from your trip in Alaska.
Yeah, perfect. Abe, this has been so awesome. Good, man. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much, guys, for inviting me to come on. I just really appreciate that a lot.
All right. Well, there you have it. Are you pumped? You ready to go to Alaska? Man, I am. All right, don't forget, go to huntalaskadiy.com. The coupon code for the Sitka Blacktail Guide is HB20. Going to save you $20. I've reviewed the guide. I think it's totally worth it. It's one of these resources that, man, it's just a game changer in my opinion. There's so much information out there, but it's scattered all over the place. And a guide like this takes firsthand experience, it takes the knowledge, it takes all these scattered informational resources and condenses it into one place. It's going to save you time. It's going to allow you to do more adventure. That's a win-win right there. So go check it out, huntalaskadiy.com. Again, if you have any questions, comments, or feedback for us, shoot us an email to podcast@exomountaingear.com. If you haven't yet subscribed to the show to receive future episodes, you can do that in iTunes or Stitcher or many of the other podcast directories, or you can always go to exomountaingear.com/podcast to get this episode, all previous episodes, and then find out where you can subscribe to get new episodes automatically. All right. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. We will catch you next time.